Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Prep Life Podcast. This is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, today with my fabulous co-host.
Hey, guys. This is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro.
So today we are doing part two of Q&A, and we had several questions after our last podcast, and we thought we would address those. So we're just going to start with our first one from Lauren, and she asked us, she had mentioned that she was surprised that I had mentioned that I have a coach, and she just assumed that we kind of coached ourselves, and she wanted to know why we felt it was important to hire a coach and have them, and if we were how we made ourselves comfortable with handing over the reins. So do you want to start with that one first, Chris, or?
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I have no problem with that one. I think that's actually a really great question. And I do believe that for me to be the best athlete that I can be, I need an outside perspective. I need an outside brain that's not involved in like every single second of my day, but can be like an outside perspective to strategize. So I know utilizing you, Amy, has really helped me with knowing, you know, like how to manipulate my calories best outside of maybe some internal cues of what I would want or need. And it can go either way. You know, some people can want to eat more food, or some people can undereat because they have specific goals, and having a coach that can really create like a macro and meso cycle for how they're going to stage you week by week into show day, I think is super crazy important. And I think the biggest thing too is that it simplifies life as an athlete. You know, if you have someone giving you directions, all you have to do is really execute them and then provide adequate feedback so that the coach can make changes. So I think that really helps me that way. All I have to worry about is like going in and doing my job as an athlete, not having to like use too much critical thinking. And then when it gets closer to stage, I would say this is one of the most important points, is that I definitely get like those prep goggles where I get, you know, hyper-focused on certain things, and I need an outside person to be able to look at the whole picture and help guide me into really just dialing in my physique perfectly. So I think there's numerous values to having a coach, and I truly believe even if you understand the craft, finding somebody that can help guide you in your personal athletic journey can provide huge benefit. I know it has for me.
Yeah, and I think too, there's just huge value in having accountability and having somebody that you need to check into. No matter how long, you know, I've done this with, you know, hundreds of athletes and things like that, I've always hired a coach. Since day one, I've always had a coach. I feel like there's, first of all, just that huge piece of checking in with somebody and having them hold you accountable to your goal. And then, like you said, when times get tough, I feel like as human beings, we have a tendency to always aim for homeostasis. And sometimes we just need that outside person pushing us beyond and stretching us to reach new heights. And then on the flip side of that, I personally, I have trouble with sometimes I'll overdo it with exercise. I won't take rest days and I'll undereat. So it's important for me to have somebody that's going to, you know, make sure that I'm keeping myself well fed, even though I know that that's the right thing to do for my athletes, and I absolutely do. It's just, it's nice to have that outside eye to also help me with my goals. I feel like if I fill up my cup and I'm able to work on myself more than anyone else, that I can best service my athletes. I just feel like it's important for me to walk the walk and to go through the things that my athletes go through so I can best empathize with them. And I also feel like it gives me an advantage as a coach because I can see where people can be pushed and stretched a little bit more. Whereas I don't think if you personally feel it and go through it, sometimes mm-hmm. you can be not aggressive enough as a coach yes. and not push them hard enough.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think it's very interesting being on both sides, being a coach and being an athlete. I think they both provide value. But like coaching is our profession, but we also are athletes as well too. So I think kind of separating those two sometimes also, at least for me, helps me mentally separate like my responsibilities and helps me get everything done in a very efficient way.
Yeah, I always feel like when I'm very organized with my goals, it makes me organized in the rest of my life. And I mean, for example, you know, I was on stage the same day that you won your pro card. I feel like my focus is there. And if I'm taking care of myself, I can best take care of other people, I feel. And that's just the way I kind of tick.
No, I think that's actually a really good point. And I know if I did not have a coach or I didn't have somebody to be accountable to, like you had mentioned earlier in the podcast, I have a tendency to put myself last. And that's where, like, I don't think that I would have done as well as an athlete because I would be taking care of my clientele. And actually, I feel like having a coach really has somebody help take care of you. Like, I know having phone calls with you on a regular basis and also, like, having my programming written for me and somebody taking a look into my health every week makes me feel special. It makes me feel like I'm being taken care of as well. So I think that's another aspect of having a coach that's great.
Yeah, it just makes you want to pay it forward to your athletes. You see what kind of value it brings you in terms of just how you feel when you're focused and dedicated to a goal and, you know, actually just executing on those really, really hard things. It helps you to encourage your athletes to do the same. And then, I definitely give people tough love, but then at the same time, I can always fall back on the fact that I can say, I felt this way too, but you know, this is what needs to be done, to make the very best of the situation. So,
absolutely.
I feel like that has a lot of value as well, but
I agree. Yeah, I think that's a great point.
Okay. And so Lauren actually had two questions. She wanted to know, how would you feel if your daughter wanted to compete and what factors, age, for example, would you take into account when making that decision? So according to the NPC rules, there is teen bikini. I have coached a teen bikini athlete. She was 19, but I've seen younger female athletes get on stage. I think the youngest that I've met at a competition was 16. I would never be, if my daughter wanted to do it, I'm not one of those moms that directs their children into different paths. And I mean, she used to love dance. And I mean, I love now that she plays volleyball, but I wasn't the biggest fan of dance. But I was there and I supported her and I took her to every practice, watched every recital, all of that. I supported her 100%. So if she ever felt like it was something that she wanted to do, I would absolutely support it. But on the flip side of that, I feel like the fact that I chose to do this later in life after I had kids, after I had played college sports, there's just a lot of factors. So she's really into volleyball and she's talked about, you know, wanting to play in high school and to play in college. And that was one of the things that I did have to give up. My husband and I used to play, even after we both played baseball and softball in college, we would play for like 10 years with all of our friends. We played co-ed softball. And that was one of the things that I had to give up when I started competing, because my energy, you know, if I was in a deficit or like in peak week and things, it wasn't the easiest to perform in that sport. So that's something to consider. And then I also feel like once you start living the prep life, you don't look at food exactly the same way again, no matter what comes into that. So, I mean, I obviously would support her in whatever decision she made, but that's kind of where my thoughts are there. Because, and it's just like if somebody were to inquire and say, hey, I want to perform in the CrossFit games. I want to be a power lifter and I want to be a bodybuilder. I don't think those goals align with each other, in regards to the nutritional support that you need for various goals. So you have to think about your sports in a performance aspect and how the nutrition supports that. So I would say that, if she absolutely loves volleyball, I would think that those two goals of bodybuilding and volleyball would not be congruent. So I hope that answers the question. Do you have anything to add on that?
No, I think that's actually a really interesting point because I know we have a lot of moms on the team with a lot of children that like they watch, you guys are their role models. So, they watch behaviors and they watch like the training and the prep. So I think it's an interesting point to consider like your family when you're in you're facilitating or executing a prep life. I can't necessarily relate because I don't have any kids, but I do know a lot of moms ask that question of like how do they portray like a positive example to their daughters and how like how appropriate is it if they are interested. And I mean I know there's a lot of moms that have their kids like pose with them or I just saw a client of mine over the past weekend. I was in her area and her kids like help her be the judge. Like I got to sit in the middle and then I had two kids, one on each side, and we were like working on Jamie's like routine. So I think you can incorporate it in a very positive way. I think bodybuilding adds a lot of value to people, but I think like anything, it needs to be done in like a healthy way. And I think a bottom line, like you said, it's about like what their end goal is or their motive for wanting to incorporate any type of sport into their life.
Of course, yeah. And it's funny when Addie was little, I used to have asparagus when I used to follow a meal plan, and I only liked the flower part, but she would want to always eat my stems, the ends of them. And
Oh.
I don't think she would ever eat those now, but she would eat the rest of my ends for me. And she's definitely, I mean, she has like a different knowledge base than like the average 12-year-old
Would
old for
agree.
sure. I mean, I got a trophy once that it had a figure competitor's suit on it, and she's like, "Mom, this is not a bikini suit. This is a figure suit. It has the straps that crisscross in the back." And I mean, she can actually go to shows, and she kind of knows like how prejudging goes, like where I place, and it's
She is
just
very
she
smart.
has like a really good eye. I mean, she helped me pick out your suit that I brought you when you won your pro card. I mean, she's just really, she likes to go to the shows. She likes to cheer on my athletes that I coach, and she likes to always watch. They're just really supportive, and I think they have more knowledge, than most kids about like protein and kind of like healthy food alternatives and things like that. But they like working out with us. They like it when they get to go on, to the hotel gym and work out with mom and dad. So, I mean, they're definitely living aspects of the prep life. I just don't think at this point, I don't think she's gonna say to me, she's not a teen yet, but I don't think she's ever gonna say like, "Hey, mom," anytime soon, anyways. So, that was that question, and then we had a question from Becca. And she actually asked a couple of different questions. So we'll start with the first one. The first one was, why do pros keep their shows a secret? So let's talk about, I mean, I guess we kind of kept yours a secret until like the contract was signed. So do you want to explain what our strategy or reasoning why we do that?
Yeah, of course. So I'm still new on the IFBB spectrum, but from what I've gathered and from my own personal experience, not promoting or like highlighting when your next show is provides a couple things. One, it does provide strategy so that, as a pro, everybody's pretty much watching you, especially if you're a well-known pro. So they're watching your trends, your competition. So having a little bit of secrecy in your show date does provide a little bit of strategy and I guess like just not having it broadcast out there. I do know as well too that because there are, there's lots of shows, sometimes I think it's just a matter of like when your body is ready, that's when you'll get onto stage. Like you're coming, your conditioning's coming in, your timeline says that, in 2, 3 weeks you should be right on point. And so, that's when you start looking for shows within your area, within like or like a specific show that provides like a good experience. So I think it's a matter of just watching your conditioning coming in a little bit as well too, to know like the best time frame for when to pick shows. That would be that's my explanation on that one. Did you have anything to extend on that, Amy?
The only other thing it would be is just the strategy of what kind of judging panel you're wanting to get in front of, and then the fact that the contracts are not required to be in until like 2 weeks, and then if you talk to the promoter, you can maybe even push it to like 1 week before. So just like you were saying, sometimes the judging panels will change too, and
True.
there may be, Sandy is kind of looking for a different look than like Steve, or
Right.
so there's definitely strategy behind it. But I mean, that would be my best explanation in terms
Yeah.
of why there is a strategy on when they tell like what they're doing and things like that.
Yeah. I think
So.
you're just watched more closely, especially if you're a well-known pro. So you just are a little bit more strategic on what you put out there, this information.
Yeah, and a lot of them are within striking distance most of the year, so
Yes.
they have the ability to wait on committing to something way in advance to, like you said, see if their bodies are ready, see if that judging panel is going to be the one that's going to give them the best odds of winning the show and things like that. So her next question was, why do some athletes shed water during peak week? And why do others not? And then what constitutes manipulating carbs during peak week and not manipulating them? So
Ooh.
that one's kind of a very context dependent answer, Becca. So it's very specific to that person. At Glam Girl, we have everything catered to that athlete's body and their needs during that time. So I think you could maybe, if you don't mind, I know the last team
Sure.
show you had to make some adjustments with one of our wellness competitors in regards to both of these things. So did you want to talk about that a little bit?
Sure, yeah, that's a great example.
Okay.
So sometimes, well, this athlete typically comes in very like dry, and like last time we peaked her, she came in pretty striated. So this time around we were starting to follow a similar protocol, but there were other factors in play, including her menstrual cycle. And so we know that your body will hold on to more water at certain stages in your menstrual cycle. And so in order to get better conditioning for her, similar to how we did prior, we had to really make sure that her carbohydrate spike, so I'll back up a little bit. Typically, the way that we peaked her was we would front load her carbohydrates. And she's like very blessed in being able to eat a lot of calories. So the way that we had planned out her carbohydrate increase was actually sitting up a little bit too high. Like we could see that she was still a little bit soft. We needed to pull out some water from especially like her glute ham tie-in and her midsection. So we dropped her carbohydrates down because, as you know, carbohydrates hold water. So that was going to help bring in her a little bit tighter. And then this time around, we had to, utilize, what's the, we utilized a diuretic or a natural water pill just to help pull out some extra water towards the end. So it was a completely different peak than we did before. Before, I had to tell her she couldn't even drink coffee because it was, making her look so dry and striated. So I think, like you said, it really depends on the athlete, and then it also depends on a couple other factors, like how stressed people are going into a show, how much cardio they're doing. I feel like that affects how much water their body is holding as well too. So it takes a lot, I think, as a coach to really just keep checking on your athlete and look at their physique and being able to manipulate things day by day. I know, like, as an athlete, that's frustrating because you plan out your meals, you're like on peak week, you just want everything to be like cut and dry. But those little changes really made a big difference in how she came in. So yeah, that's one example.
Yeah, I have a glaring example, and she's a pro now. Karina, I remember we utilized a water pill for her and her first show, and her feedback was that she was so, I mean, she came in so hard, so striated that they were like, she does not belong in bikini. She belongs in women's physique. And then we just didn't give her a water pill, basically did more of like a front load on carbs. And then we, were able to like soften her up enough so that she placed top five in bikini in the open at her next show. But I mean, she's one of those people that she ended up winning the overall in figure. So it's just different body types, and whatever category you're in matters. So, that hardness, the vascularity, the striated look, that's okay in figure, but in bikini, we can't really have those featherings and striations. So I have another competitor in particular that she gets really feathered glutes. I mean, problems, yeah, that would be like, but yeah, we can never give her a water pill because she'll come in way too hard. And then, most of my competitors at a regional level, I bring them in a hair softer, just because you're getting compared against everyone that's at that show. So if you come in peeled at a regional show, sometimes you look too hard and you stand out too much. But then if you were to step on a national stage, you would look just right on point. So most national competitors, I bring them in so conditioned that we don't need a water pill. And we typically front load at that point because they're basically reversing into the show. We don't even need to back load. But it's just, you have to kind of, as a coach, you have to tinker a little bit with what's going to be showing up on stage. For example, I have a client in Alaska, and if we bring her in peeled, like she has great conditioning. I mean, she gets marked down for that because apples to apples, everyone else looks softer and she almost looks out of the category. But then you put her on a national stage and she would look just right on par. So it's definitely context dependent, not just with the athlete, but also the show that they're competing in. There's
That's a
definitely a
really good point.
strategy. So make sure you have a coach that knows those differences and things like that. So
Really good point. I didn't even think about the show part. That is a big factor.
okay, so the next one comes from Katie Hughes. It looks like she is a nurse, and she noticed that we have a lot of nurses on the team, which is definitely true. And I have coached several shift workers in the past. So her question is about when she's in the operating room, and kind of like centered around meal timing. So there's like a lot of times there she's not hungry or she's going without lunch. And she just was wondering, as long as I hit my macros, is that okay? Can I have, four meals or, three meals or whatever? So the answer to your question, Katie, is obviously hitting the total protein is super key. You want to make sure that you have enough protein. in your day to support muscle tissue development and then also to maintain your muscle. So that's super important. And then I would also pay special attention to the protein in your nutrient timing around your workout. So making sure that you're having it before and after so that you're supporting muscle protein synthesis. But in general, the studies that have shown on weight loss that, you know, they compare somebody with 13 meals versus one meal, and there was really no difference in the weight loss as long as the calories were the same. So that definitely makes a strong case for intermittent fasting being, you know, a good thing. And if we're to dive deeper into this and you're considering like the OR kind of like a shift working type of scenario, it's totally fine to do an eating window. Intermittent fasting, you have to be careful though. As a female, you don't really want to fast longer than 16 hours. So a good safe window would be like an 8-hour feeding window. And I mean, I've seen successful competitors do just 3 big meals. Some people like to space them out and eat every 2 hours. I personally like to do that where I eat like 5 meals. It's your preference. I feel like I'm rambling though. So why don't you take a little bit of that question as well, Chris?
Sure. Yeah, no, I think you bring up the biggest point as like what you can do consistently. And there's the whole thing about like your circadian rhythms playing a role in your body composition. So like your body knowing, no, I'm just getting into sleep, but you definitely want to make sure that there is some type of rhythm also with your sleep and also with your nutrition so that your gut microbiome is adjusted to the times that you are eating and then also knowing the times that you are fasting. So I think that there's no magic number as to how many meals you need to have. I think the biggest thing is some type of consistency and some type of feeding window that can be in alignment with your schedule.
Yeah. And if somebody has digestive problems where they're just always in fight or flight mode, they're a really high stress individual. The way that we digest food when we are in fight or flight, remember that that's delayed. So you're going to want to give yourself, you know, that's why we kind of have those 2 hour, eat every 2 to 3 hours. You know, it may not work for everyone. So you may need more time to digest your food because remember, if you're in fight or flight mode, things are getting put on pause. So some people may need like 4 hours to digest a meal. But yeah, that's something to consider too. When it comes down to it, it's supposed to take 90 minutes. It's kind of like the standard digestion, period, but some foods take 12 to 16 hours to fully digest completely. So, that's where the time restricted feeding window. We talked a lot about that, yes, in our podcast with Dr. Sachin Panda, in our time restricted feeding window. That, is definitely relevant. So take a look at that. And then also, you just don't want to go like a 24 hour fast as a female, because then it starts to kind of mess with the hormones, female hormones kind of trigger the alarm, so to speak. Males can kind of get away with that sometimes. There's been some studies that show that it doesn't have as much of a detriment to the male hormones doing that large of a fasting window. But 12 to 16 hours is really good for cell autophagy. So perfect. Anything to add on that?
No, I don't think so. I think that covers a lot.
Okay. I think that was our last question. We're right at the 30 minute mark. So this kind of concludes our Q&A, unless there was there one other thing that we were going to talk about? I can't remember.
We had also talked about prior to the podcast about how we preserve muscle mass while dieting.
Oh,
yes. If you want to touch on that really quickly.
Yes. Well, I mean, I kind of alluded to that with the total protein amount, in terms of your nutrient timing, and then also the total protein for the day needs to be on par for sure, to preserve muscle. But the Chris Voss study kind of shows, and you can kind of look into that, a little bit more in depth, where if you diet over a longer period of time and you do a slower cut, you're able to preserve more muscle tissue than just doing a crash diet. That particular study showed, I think Peter Fitchin and another individual, where they had lost several pounds of muscle mass compared to Chris Voss, who dieted over a very long extended period of time, very slow cut, versus like a crash diet, 12-week, I think, prep were the others, if I'm not mistaken. But
Yeah.
yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. Your nutrition plays a big role in preserving your muscle mass. And I know when we do our programming for clients, we're very strategic in how we do our macro percentages so that they are getting some type of fuel source based off of how their meal plan is set up, whether they're leaning more towards a high fat or a high carb type of meal plan or macro base. But then there's always that accounting of, what you're ingesting for your protein. You touched on that as well when you had Corinne on the podcast talking about her vegan diet. So there's always strategy in making sure the muscle tissue is supported with your nutrition. And then also, I know while dieting, people get afraid that they're going to lose their muscle tissue because their calories are low, and sometimes they notice that their strength dips a little bit in the gym. And I just think that if you are training, you're still training for that overreaching effect and with high intensity, that's preserving as much muscle tissue as possible because of the style of training that you're doing as well too. Things like lots of steady state walking, or cardio that way. Those are the things where it will help, take away from muscle mass and muscle tissue. So it's a context dependent situation on how to manipulate the body, but I really do think that preserving muscle tissue comes down to foundational your nutrition.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're just in it for the slow and steady wins the race, and trying to feed the person as much as possible and to do as little cardio as possible is always that ultimate goal to keeping the muscles full, but also getting that conditioning on point. So with that, we are signing off. If you would be so kind, if you find value in this podcast, please leave us a rating or review on iTunes. That way, other people that are interested in similar topics could find us. We would sure appreciate it. And so you don't miss an episode, be sure to subscribe. You can find us on Instagram at Prep Life Podcast. That's where we've received some of these DMs that I'm referring to. So feel free to send us any messages or feedback through there, or any questions you may have. You can also find us on Instagram at Glam Girl Bikini. And if you would like to apply to become a unicorn with the Glam Girls, you can go to glamgirlbikini.com and hit the Get Started button to apply. So this is your founder and CEO of Glam Girl Bikini, Amy Enger, signing off with my fabulous co-host.
And this is Chris Nicole, Glam Girl Bikini Coach and IFBB Bikini Pro. Thanks for listening, guys.